This is the story of the one. As a custodial supervisor at a high school, he knows that during cold and flu season, germs spread fast. It's why he partners with Grainger to stay fully stocked on the products and supplies he needs, from tissues to disinfectants to floor scrubbers. Also that he can help students, staff, and teachers stay healthy and focused. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Hello everyone, and welcome back. Episode 141, I believe, of your favourite Formula One show. And today, we're back to talk about the US Grand Prix. A weirdly action-packed weekend with a lot of things to talk about. So, of course, to talk through all those things, I need a certain Mr. 183. How are we doing, my friend?
I'm good. I'm hoping that we can do a good job getting through all of the action that happened over the course of the weekend. But, yeah, obviously another sprint race. So plenty of on-track competitive action to get through. And yeah, we've got another one in a couple of weeks' time, haven't we? So becoming thick and
fast. A race between then and yeah. Now, which is there's a lot of Formula One going on. You know, we mentioned this last week, but of course, you know, for those of you that enjoy listening to the podcast, you got a lot of podcasts coming up over the next couple of weeks. So yeah, definitely, of course, you know, if you're watching this on my main channel, and you're worried you're going to miss any of these podcasts, there'll be a link down in the description below to the Knowing Wheel official podcast channel. All the podcasts from next year are going to be going live exclusively over there, so you definitely want to get yourself subbed. Jamie, we will do our weekly check-in.
Oh, I forgot about this.
Oh, how have you forgot? Come on, man. You got to be keeping up with it. We're up to 255 subs on the podcast channel.
Oh, nice. I'm on 548.
So the gap's down to 293.
Yes, we'll make it. I'm not sure about 2024 anymore. If we'll make it by then.
You might need a bit of a bigger push.
But if you guys all go and sub,
some episodes.
Everyone who's watching this on Matt212's channel, if you go and subscribe to the podcast channel, we'd probably hit it like today. So,
if everyone on my channel subscribed to the podcast channel, we'd smash it. yeah. And of course, you know, we'll keep remembering it so we don't forget. But we have agreed that when we hit 10,000 subs on the podcast channel, we will try and get to every team factory in Europe in under 24 hours. So,
I think
Jamie,
in the world.
We can't quite get to America and back. is the one problem there? Okay, fair enough. But yeah, I mean, obviously we had quite a few things before going into the weekend. Obviously we did do a USGP preview show, didn't we? Obviously Danny Ric is back. And Haas, their massive upgrade that was going to bring Nico Hülkenberg his first ever Formula One podium.
Well, he did get a form of P3 in the end. It was just a P13. So we moved.
How is that a form of P3
exactly? Well, it's got a 3 in it.
Right, okay.
But sadly not. I do think, though, similarly, Aston Martin bought quite a few. They bought a floor upgrade as well. Bringing a big upgrade to a sprint weekend, I think teams are probably going to start avoiding doing that because
yes,
it does leave you with literally an hour of track time to work out how to set your package up with the new systems. So I'm not surprised that they didn't do very well on the Friday and Saturday, both those teams. But actually on the Sunday, they obviously elected to both start from the pit lane. And both of the teams, Aston Martin and Haas, had a better Sunday race than they had up to that point in the weekend. So, yeah, I wonder if teams will change their development strategy to avoid bringing big upgrades to the sprint weekends, just so they give themselves more chance to understand the package.
Well, you want to make sure that the package is working properly, don't you? And, of course, you know, that's normally a 5 or 6 lap installation run, and suddenly that's a third of your practice time gone for a weekend. Obviously, I know, you know, you don't even get FP2 anymore, do we?
No.
Or do we?
Parc Fermé
is
from
FP2?
The sprint quali.
Yeah,
there
but
is,
there
is
no
FP2. Yeah.
But it's pointless, basically, isn't it? It shows you how stupid this format is when even I got no idea that there's a free practice 2 halfway through a weekend. But it is just so bizarre, isn't it?
Wait, there isn't FP2.
There isn't FP2.
Yeah, there isn't, is there?
We don't know if there's FP2 anymore.
You just have practice.
It's quali.
Proper quali.
Practice.
Then you have sprint quali, sprint race. That's it. There's no practice 2.
There is no practice 2.
No.
Oh.
Wow, okay. We're clearly experts on this field.
This is horrendous. It's a knowing wheel.
Everyone's just
what.
Turned off. Apologies.
Formula One changed their format around too much, man. It's so... I mean, We'll talk about it more, won't we, after the sprint race, but it really is just a bit all over the show, isn't it, at the moment?
And then probably there are murmurs that they're going to change the format for sprints again next year. So
they're going to. Well, this is what we were going to talk about in a bit, but we'll get through all of Friday practice then, of course. Aston Martin not able to really get any running in with either of the cars there. Obviously, Stroll had some reliability problems, so they obviously didn't want to do anything to risk either of the cars before they went into qualifying. And that was very, very clear as we moved into qualifying, because both Aston Martins, it's the first time Alonso hasn't made Q3 all year, and he was out in Q1.
Yeah, yeah, P17, wasn't he? Which was pretty insane to see. Aston Martin were just off the pace completely. And so are Williams, which is surprising. They've not both gone out of Q1 since before the summer break. So, yeah, shame for them. And also, Haas's amazing new upgrade left them P16 and 15. So that was quality. So, yeah, the last bit of hopium has now disappeared for this season. And we go again in 2024.
Haas are going to give Hülkenberg a world title, are they?
Oh, yeah, definitely. Definitely going to happen.
I mean, it is hilarious, isn't it? Every team that's done a big upgrade this year has been, you know, leapt forward into the top group, apart from Haas.
There's only been two examples of that, really. So, and I think I'd back Aston and McLaren to have a much better
technical
department
Haas,
than Haas.
Yeah. It's all a little bit weird, isn't it? Q2, though, it kind of went under the radar. At least it felt like at the time. Perez almost had another big embarrassment, didn't he? But he did just squeeze through into Q3.
Yeah.
19,000 ahead of Tsunoda. 18,000 ahead of Tsunoda. 19,000 ahead of Zhou Guanyu.
Yeah. Yeah. Wild. And it's not even surprising at this point, is it? Like, looking back, the five non-Q3s in a row at the time was a bit bad, but that's really just where he is now, with the McLarens being up in that top group. Perez is genuinely like between 6th and 9th every week. So, yeah, kind of like he's half a second off Verstappen, but because of, especially in quali pace, because the field is so close, he just does end up in 8th place every week, approximately. So, yeah, it was about where he should be based on his pace, really. But a shame for Perez, and I'm sure he'll reset over the winter and finish third again next year. But there we go.
If he's still got a drive.
Oh, he will. There's no way they're going to drop him now.
If Hamilton beats him, that's apparently what they've said.
Yeah, well, I don't think that'll happen after this weekend.
Well, we spoke about that, didn't we, a couple of weeks ago, to be fair. But yeah, so Tsunoda, obviously, both Alfa Romeos there. Kevin Magnussen and Danny Ric all out in Q2. And then we get into Q3, Jamie. And once again, on a Friday night, Max Verstappen likes to give us all just a teeny tiny bit of hope before he ruins that all over the weekend, because he'd actually mess up, wouldn't he, on his final run. It wasn't a huge mistake, but it is rare to see from the Dutchman this year. Proves he is still human, kind of.
Yeah, once he's won a title and is 200 points clear in the championship, he can make mistakes. Yeah, it was a... I think he basically... Did he mess up turn one, I think? He was basically not up that much on his own time on the final runs. And basically just went full send into turn 19, which all through the session he'd been very careful in respecting the track limits by a mile, like by not really getting that close in the grand scheme of things. So you could tell the way he was driving that last sector that he was going to go for it, because he had to improve at all. And then he went for it a little bit too hard and just exceeded the track limits. It was a fair cop. He admitted that he wasn't that annoyed, I don't think. He probably knew that he was going to win the race anyway. He set the pole position time, but it was swiftly deleted, which left him P6 on the grid, which is the lowest he's qualified, I think, since Miami.
I believe so, yeah.
Singapore? No, he's out in Q2, wasn't he?
Yeah, in Belgium as well. Yeah, obviously, because of penalties, he was 6th.
Yeah, and Singapore is out in Q2, but apart from that.
Yeah, and it did mean, of course, just like Belgium, it was Charles Leclerc able to pick up the pieces then, in a session where it was kind of all the talk was about Lando and Lewis were the ones kind of giving Max a bit of hell to pay. Yeah, Charles Leclerc was right there as well, just, you know, maybe you'd argue it's British bias media, but Leclerc was absolutely doing the job, wasn't he, on Friday night, took that pole position. ahead of both Brits there. His teammate Carlos Sainz lines up P4. Definitely looked like, again, a weekend where he was kind of the old Charles Leclerc back, you know, not absolutely ripping Sainz to shreds, but just that bit ahead of him, which is reassuring to see for Charles and obviously just the whole Ferrari power dynamic. George Russell would line up P5 ahead of Max. Then you'd have both Alpines, Perez and Oscar Piastri, rounding out our top 10, obviously, for Sunday's race. But of course, before we move to that, we've got all of Sprint Race Weekend Saturday.
Yes, indeed. And it got away straight away in SQ1 with different, which is a bit strange. I guess the teams had a bit more data to go over. But Q1, obviously, the Aston Martins were probably the main people who looked a bit better than they had done, both getting through this time, which left out Sargeant P20, because obviously that's where he lives in qualifying. Tsunoda was actually way worse. He dropped, P11 to P19.
He did make a mistake.
Yeah, he was very annoyed with himself, wasn't he? With Bottas and then two Haases, obviously, making use of their upgrade in qualifying P16 and 17. The pain. So the Astons got through to Q2, or SQ2, but that was it, really. Both of them out then. Along with, kind of the usual suspects. He had Ricardo, Ocon and Joe with both Aston Martins too, which left people you might expect in Q3, SQ3. And Albon. Albon was in Q3. Yeah, I forgot about that. Despite going out in Q1 the night before. And then overnight, speaking of the night before, they actually made the track limits a bit wider, which I really don't like. I don't know why they did that.
It's so stupid, isn't it?
It's like just... You know, you've got a football pitch. If you just make the lines squiggly, because that helps people keep the ball in play.
I skied it over the bar three times.
Let's make the bar first higher.
Let's make the crossbar a foot higher. I can understand it between seasons, but this whole moaning from the drivers, because of course the main reason they did that, I believe, was due to the nature of the curbs. Was kind of dragging the car out more. So don't use that much of the curb is kind of the thing there, isn't it? Or if you're worried about that, then it's kind of got to be that risk versus reward, hasn't it?
Yeah.
And
completely.
If a driver's worried that curb's going to drag them out, then you don't touch it. If a driver braves it out over that curb, gains a tenth from it, and doesn't get dragged
Fair
out,
play.
Then they deserve to be further up.
Yeah, exactly. And I do think this sort of thing has to be done outside of the race weekend, like pre-weekend.
Yeah.
I could arguably see it if it was a normal race weekend between a Friday and a Saturday where there's just practice.
After practice, yeah.
The track should be in Parc Fermé as well.
Unless obviously safety grounds.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah.
It just is, yeah, very, very... Because it was turn 19, turn 9, I believe, and also turn 11 or 12.
And they just made the track limits a bit wider, basically.
Well, effectively, you were racing on a new track.
Slightly,
which is just, again, you don't get that in any other sport where the rules just change during a weekend.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And it was a bit strange, but that allowed Verstappen to not run over the track limits at turn 19 this time and did get
pole. Despite taking the same line, yeah.
Yeah, did get pole by not very much. It was, less than a tenth?
Half a tenth, wasn't it? 0.55, I believe, over Charles Leclerc.
And then the third and fourth was Hamilton and Lando. Both super, super tight as well. So it's a very, very close four cars fighting for the pole position.
Yeah.
Yeah. So it bodes well, although the race pace had other things on its mind. So, yes. That took us ahead of who else was there? Oscar Piastri was in P5. Good showing on Saturday morning for McLaren. Piastri struggled a bit more on Friday night with Sainz, Perez, Russell, who's just perennially eighth now at this point, really. And Albon with Gasly in P10. And that brought us on to sprint. Well, I was literally falling asleep as a
so
European,
was I
complaining about a time zone, how dare I. But this started at 11 o'clock at night, and genuinely about 10 laps in I was falling asleep.
I quite like when we have races at random times occasionally. You know, there's something quite exciting about getting up for the Japanese Grand Prix. I know I was saying this yesterday as well. You know, it probably helps because I'm self-employed. But I wouldn't mind if Las Vegas was a Monday morning race. That'd be quite cool, I think.
I wouldn't like that.
Just because it's a bit different. It was kind of frustrating, wasn't it? And obviously we'll go into why after the sprint race. Carlos Sainz, though, Ferrari doing a Ferrari, took a bit of a gamble, which I quite liked. It had a little bit of intrigue, didn't it? So Sainz was starting on a set of the soft compound tyres. But all the aggression was between Charles and Max in towards turn one, wasn't it?
Mm. And we've seen very, very often in the recent years that P2 is a better place to start than P1 around the COTA circuit. So yeah, that kind of showed itself again on Saturday with Leclerc starting second. Got a better start, had a very good opportunity, but Max completely just cut him off, which was just about fair. It was borderline. And had Leclerc wanted to make a meal of it, he could have done, and then it would have been a crash. But I think it was just the right side of fair, and Verstappen was able to cut him off and hold the lead into turn one, which also allowed Hamilton past Leclerc, wasn't it?
Yes, yeah, right on the outside.
Over the white lines, but there we go. Yeah.
Yeah, I must admit, even as a Lewis fan, I'm not quite sure how he got away with that.
It's lap one leniency, isn't it? I think that's the only reason. You do that on lap two or lap 16, then yeah, it's a penalty.
I suppose. It was one of those ones as well, though, wasn't it? You know, that run up towards turn one. Again, 10, 15 years ago, a lot of people would have been very, very unhappy about, but that's the state Formula One's in now. You're allowed to do that, and no one really bats an eyelid. But I must admit, if I was Charles Leclerc there, like, especially because I'm not in a big fight for the Drivers' Championship or anything, I would have just sent it on him. I would have made sure my front wing was in front of his into that first apex. I don't care what angle the rest of the car's at, I would have just done it.
It would have been pointing in all directions, probably.
It would have been pointing, yeah, pretty much still towards Mexico.
Yes.
But I would have absolutely gone for that.
Fair. I think, yeah, Max obviously knew it wasn't even that important for him to hold the lead. I guess it just makes his race a bit easier. But then equally for Leclerc, he's never, like, overtaking Verstappen at turn one will not make a difference to his race because he's not going to beat him anyway.
Always say, though, it's whenever I say things like that, it's got very little to do, actually, with the race that's
on. It's the mentality, isn't it?
It's all about, say, for example, Ferrari. It's never going to happen, but Ferrari have a breakthrough with their car for next year, and they're in the fight now with Verstappen for the world title. You know, if you get to COTA, you say you're 5 points behind him or something like that in the championship, and you line up in the same positions again, he's going to be heading under to turn one after almost putting you in a wall, and he's just going to be going, oh, is he going to dive me? Is he going to dive me, or is he not going to? Because this is obviously what Verstappen did for years. That's why everyone jumps out of his way. I've said it so many times on this show, but if I was a junior driver looking to get to Formula One now, even if I'm not in a car that's competing against Max, if I was on a racetrack with him, I would not be making his life easy solely for if I end up in a title fight with him in the future. Mm.
Well, I listened to a podcast with Gerhard Berger this week, and he was saying that when Senna came onto the grid, that was exactly what he did.
Yeah.
He was just not giving way to anyone, and he's fair to do that. Even when he was driving the Tyrrell or the Lotus, like, the whole, like, you're not going to beat me in a fight mentality, even if actually your car isn't there to win at that point, it just serves you down the line. So
yeah,
and that's what we saw.
Yeah, it's slightly different because, you know, unfortunately, as we've seen, it's always about NASCAR that they talk about this, but of course, where the risk of death has gone from it, which is a very morbid statement to make,
yeah,
kind of makes people just take risky moves without worrying about it anymore.
Yeah.
But yeah, you've kind of, someone has got to step up to that plate with Max, and it was a shame that George only really did it once in Baku. But it's probably the best example I can think of this year still of
Perez trying in Austria and it lasted one corner.
Yeah, that did also happen, yeah. But, I mean, talking of contacting towards turn one, though, Carlos Sainz just adored, without a door, Oscar Piastri, didn't he? Just ran right to the side of him, Weber Barrichello style, from Nürburgring, I want to say, 2009.
Yeah, Nürburgring 2009. Weber got a drive through for that, didn't he?
So, he did.
Yeah, only because that was the smallest penalty they could give at the time. Which I think they should go back to, because 5 second penalties make no difference these days. So
often is the case, yeah.
Yeah.
And I don't know whether it was that, or just Piastri cooked his tyres too early on, whether that was a contributing factor. But Piastri just fell down the order early on, didn't he?
Yeah, he was not happy in the early stage of the sprint. So, yeah, I think he dropped down to about 10th. He was behind Gasly, wasn't he, ahead of Albon?
Yeah, 10th, I believe. I think he was behind Albon.
Yeah, he would have been, because Albon finished 9th in the end, didn't he? Yeah, speaking of 5 second penalties being pointless, George Russell got one for passing Oscar Piastri well off the track. At the time, was like, well, he forced me off, no pen. And then in hindsight, was able to say, actually, yeah, that was a penalty, so well done. And this is kind of what I mean. 5 seconds in actually did cost Russell a position. Could have cost him 2 quite easily. But that's in a sprint race. Over the course of a race distance, it very, very rarely makes a difference just because of how long the races are. 5 seconds is such a drop in the ocean that, like, yeah. I would quite like to see it become just drive-throughs again, or maybe 10 seconds as a minimum or something.
So. I think with that, it probably... I don't think you should give him the option. I think you've just got to give that place back. Because, and it genuinely now, it was my mum that... I hadn't really thought about it this way. But she was like, yeah, but if they have to then give the place back, then you get to watch the battle again.
Mm.
And it was kind of one of those ones where I went, oh yeah.
Oh yeah.
it just makes complete sense, doesn't it? You should have to give the place back up and work for it again.
Mm.
Rather than just driving off into the distance.
Well, do you remember back in 2017? You might not remember, it was Abu Dhabi, and you basically had Renault versus Toro Rosso for a point at the constructors. So I think Hülkenberg overtook Perez on lap one. Back in the days where it was impossible to follow. So if you don't do it on lap one, you're basically done.
And especially at Abu Dhabi.
Especially at Abu Dhabi in those days. So Hülkenberg literally like feigned a move to the outside of turn 11 at Abu Dhabi. Jumped the entire chicane, held the position, and then just drove off because the Renault was technically faster than the Force India, and he just drove off into the distance, and that was it. And ended up finishing 6th, beat Toro Rosso by a few points, took the penalty, and that was it. And like, that was the right decision to make. It's obviously unsportsmanlike, and it's not what the penalty is for, but it's just not enough of a deterrent, I don't think. So maybe they should make it bigger. And we did see them actually make the maximum fines bigger before the weekend, didn't we? They've gone up to €1 million now, which is frankly ridiculous. But
I mean, it won't happen though.
No one will ever get £1 million.
No one's going to get a penalty fine. That sort of thing.
Yeah, but let us know what you think. Should penalties be bigger? I think they should be.
Well, I think, yeah, like I said though, of course, now, especially because the cars can follow each other, you know, it should be that you have to give that place back. Because if you had to go off the road to get it anyway, you've clearly been working for it.
Yeah.
And you'd be amazed how many drivers would just back out of moves as well. When they know full well, obviously, they've been a bit cheeky with it.
Yeah.
But to be honest, the sprint race was pretty dead, wasn't it?
Yeah. Yeah. Hence the falling asleep about 11:30. So, yeah, you had a little bit of movement. I think Sainz obviously got up to 4th at the start, but ended up dropping back to 6th. And that was literally it. So, yes. Verstappen won ahead of Hamilton and Leclerc with... Norris actually closed down a big gap on Leclerc towards the end, which kind of gave us...
I think that was Leclerc just kind of checking out, because I think even he was bored.
Yeah, potentially. But Norris was P4, ahead of Perez, Sainz, Russell, and Gasly picked up the last point. Gasly was actually ahead of Russell, wasn't he? Because Russell got the penalty.
So yes.
Gasly P7, yeah. Russell 8th, and Albon just missed out by a couple of hundredths on Russell. And Piastri didn't get points back in 10th, sadly for him. And that led us on to Sunday.
Yeah, I mean, it was kind of horrible, isn't it? Because like a lot of people have obviously said now with the sprint race, it not only was it pretty dull, but you also now know what's going to happen in the race. It feels like a spoiler, doesn't it, for the actual Grand Prix?
It takes out the uncertainty. Yeah, they should get the sprinklers out, honestly.
I think, honestly, now, what they need to do with the sprints, I've seen two theories that I quite like the idea of. One of them... I think is far more possible than the other, but the other one I think would be funnier. So,
okay. Do it on wet.
Two sprint weekend formats, Jamie. Number one, everyone goes out for qualifying, as they normally would, except for the grid is decided by your team, your both drivers' fastest qualifying times combined.
It's like Mario Kart, it's like Double Dash.
Yep. 10 cars start the race, one from each team. You can pick whichever driver you like.
That would not go down well with the teams.
You get to the pits. And once they've come to a complete stop, the other driver can start the race.
No way. That would never work in a million years.
Wouldn't it be funny to watch Checo? It would be absolutely hilarious.
It would be so funny. For Aston Martin, that would be sick, because Stroll can do the start. And Alonso
No, you want Alonso in at the start.
Oh, yeah, I don't know.
Because Alonso's got racecraft.
Yeah, but Stroll's just a merchant at starting, isn't he?
Yeah, but that's because he's not a merchant at qualifying.
I just can't imagine that Alpine drivers getting on enough to do this, to share anything.
No, Alpine would end up in special circumstances where they both have both cars doing it.
Ocon just wouldn't pit to let Gasly drive.
Well, no, they both have to do exactly half of the race.
Yeah.
That's the whole point. Or, the far more plausible theory that I quite like, Jamie.
Mm-hmm.
Very simple. Sprint championship.
Yeah, I've heard this a lot. Mm.
Reverse grids. Reverse championship order for the sprint race. So qualifying on Friday is normal. Reverse championship grid for the sprint race, and it's got its own points table. So you can keep the points exactly how they are if you want. 8, 7, 6, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
Mm-hmm.
They don't add to your real championship points, so it doesn't matter as much.
You can take a few risks.
You can't imagine a lot of teams would, because obviously they're still just worried about Sunday. But it gives drive, you know, gives something else to have a bit of a conversation about going into a weekend. And if it's reverse championship, you'd hopefully get some actual racing.
The problem is teams will never agree to reverse championship because the big teams have no reason to. Because all it does is make
because it doesn't affect the bigger picture is the point.
But all it does is make it more likely they're going to end up in a crash, which is money. So big teams would never agree to do
it. Remove it from the budget cap.
But even so, it's effort. Like teams.
I would think, potentially. The thing is, at the end of the day, Formula One can do whatever they want.
They can.
Like, teams sensibly aren't going to leave. It's not that Formula One can't do a lot of these things to make sprint races exciting. They just won't, I think, is the big problem, isn't it? And, I mean, we doubted them ever since the beginning, but COTA very much felt like the novelty had completely worn off.
It was a particularly bad race. Like, Qatar sprint was pretty good. I do think they were unlucky with how dead it was. My favourite thing to do, I do like the sprint championship idea, and that thing does work in, like, the Tour de France, because you kind of have the...
Multiple championships going on inside the bigger picture, don't
you? You've got like the Mountain Stages Championship and the Sprint Stages Championship, whatever. So it would be good. I just think there's no chance in my mind that teams ever do reverse grids, sadly. The thing I want them to do, bring a completely new compound of tyre, whether it's grooved or whether it's like just way, way harder than anything they're used to. Just something that teams have no idea about and they only use it for the sprint races.
You then run a risk, because let's be fair, you're probably asking Pirelli to do this.
Mm-hmm.
That Pirelli end up doing something that would never work. There's no way Pirelli would suddenly allow Bridgestone to start showing up at Grand Prix weekends.
Maybe not.
The only problem you've then got there is when two or three teams start going, actually, we prefer these tyres. Why aren't all the tyres like this?
Yeah. True, but I think they mentioned that on Sky commentary, and I thought that sounds like quite a good idea. Sprints, they need something to spice it off a little bit, and I think everyone's kind of realizing.
Formula One has kind of tried to bring these sprints in, and obviously they've half done them anyway, and they've just got to make, you know, it's, and again, it's that fine balance we spoke about so often before between sport and entertainment. But if they can find a way... Because let's be fair, Formula 1 at the moment is minted. They could cover the crash damage for the teams with these kind of things. They've just got to find a way to make sprints far more likely to be entertaining.
Sprinklers.
Yeah, but even then, it will just
it's
be...
It's just novelty.
It will just be someone will claim it's rigged, won't they, when it benefits one driver over another. There's got to be something done.
Junior drivers.
I even still don't mind the idea that they go out for qualifying one at a time, but in championship order. So Max has got a slightly worse track than Perez, who's got a slightly worse track than Lewis. But it'll be two races before we then get rain after 2 minutes, and Max takes pole by 8 seconds.
And we've got to wait. We've got like half an hour for everyone to do their laps, and we know that Max is on pole already.
So, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
It just feels like something needs to... But then again, if that's only for a sprint race...
It doesn't
affect the real championship, not the end of the world. I don't know. It's such a weird, complicated, convoluted little thing, isn't it? That probably, sensibly, should never become a problem in the first place.
I do think if we have two more dead sprint races to end this season... Is that two more or just one more?
One more. Brazil.
Yeah, so if Brazil is dead too, that will leave everyone with a bad memory of sprint races this year. Because the last two have been bad.
Yeah, because COTA was bad.
Qatar was good.
Austria was good. Decent enough.
I enjoyed it as a Hulk fan. P2 for the race.
Baku was pretty mediocre from what I remember. Yeah.
It was a Russell.
It was another preview for the race, wasn't it?
Yeah.
And what was the other one? Belgium was
interesting a bit.
Belgium should have been interesting. The fact that Belgium wasn't.
It was wet to dry as well, wasn't it? Or dry to wet.
But the safety car ruined it, and obviously the fact that Formula One are so scared to race at Belgium in the wet now.
Yeah.
Yeah, difficult. I would never forget the Porsche Cup race there. Genuinely, it spit with rain for 30 seconds. They red flagged it and the rain stopped. One car ran wide. That's why they did it. It was so infuriating.
Well, we've got another year to look forward to that. Two years now,
Let's get into the real race, Jamie. We've kind of spoiled it because we talked about the sprint race, but talk me through the start.
Well, before the start, we had those two teams which struggled to work out their setups. All of them started from the pit lane. So you had four cars in the pits, 16 on the track, of course. The Haas and the Alfa Romeo, the Aston Martin, starting from the pit lane. I don't know what order they started in. I guess they just would have gone on the grid order.
No, whoever gets to the end of the pit lane first.
Oh, wow. That's interesting.
That's how it goes, I believe.
Only 16 cars taking the lights.
Haas, because obviously they're at the end of the pit lane.
Yeah, definitely. Lando Norris was one of the drivers who took the lights, and he actually took the lead as well. So, once again, P2 on the grid, with just being OP at COTA, took the lead as turn one from Leclerc, whose pole to win conversion rate was, from that point onwards, obviously going to get worse.
The fact that no one remembers Leclerc was on pole by lap 3 is staggering, isn't it?
Yeah. You know he's got the most poles now to not have a championship.
He's broken the record. Is he taking that from Bottas?
Yeah, 21 poles.
Wild. And it's not even like he's been close to a championship either.
No, not particularly.
He's just a mega one-lap runner.
Well, even Bottas was able to turn 20 of his poles into a bunch of wins, like at least 10, I would say.
Probably less than that, 6 or 7, I think, only.
Isn't Mercedes 5 years? I reckon more than that. I don't know. But, Leclerc, 21 pole positions and 4 wins from pole?
It's mad, isn't it?
Yeah.
How many years Leclerc's had no wins in Formula 1 as well is wild. And how many wins is that without an illegal engine,
Two?
Did he only win two races last year? Two wins from pole, of course.
So he won 3 races last year, and then one was from second.
Yes. Wild.
Yeah.
Just wild.
Yeah. Quite funny, but yeah. Other things happened on lap one too. Carlos Sainz was able to get past Lewis Hamilton into turn one down the inside. He actually did send it, unlike Leclerc on Saturday. And was able to take P3 at the time. Yeah, it would have been P3, wouldn't it? And also, Ocon managed to have lack of awareness and crash into Piastri. Ran the kink of turn 2. And that ended up causing both of them to have to retire, which is quite surprising because I guess it was quite substantial contact at quite high speed. But Ocon especially, cars often survive that kind of thing, especially if they're driven by Lewis Hamilton. That was a bit surprising that a little bit of wheel-to-side pod contact and both of them had to retire.
Yeah, it did take them quite a while, of course, and they both kind of fell down the order, didn't they? Both had side pod damage from it, rather weirdly, so they locked onto each other pretty nice and aggressively there, which again, was Alpine going, well, at least we beat the kid that betrayed us. I hope he's hating his time at McLaren with a sprint win this year.
With a race win and a bunch of podiums, well done.
Shocking behaviour by Alpine. Piastri even, I'll get me right name there in the end, is 17 points, I believe, behind Alpine? could very well be that Alpine's driver lineup this year are both going to... What could have been Alpine's driver lineup this year is going to outscore Alpine individually.
Well, Alonso definitely will.
Alonso has, yeah.
Alpine are 100. Guaranteed now. Piastri is
Oscar's on 83.
83. Yeah.
And it could have easily been more.
Yeah.
That's the battle to watch out with by the end of the year.
Piastri versus Alpine. There's not much else going on.
Piastri versus Alpine, yeah. Wild. Absolutely wild. But yeah, you know, it was a shame for Piastri because, let's be fair, he was on the edge of the track. There wasn't a lot else he could do in that scenario, was it? But obviously the kind of thing we were focusing on early on was obviously Hamilton and Max getting past both Ferraris. And I can't lie, it felt like to me that Max was kind of sat there going, oh, Lewis has overtaken a car, probably I should get on with it and overtake him as well. Oh, Lewis has overtaken another car, I'll just overtake them as well then, now I need to.
Yeah.
You know, try and make it look like I'm struggling.
It was like he was toying with everyone a little bit, but, I mean, maybe. The car pace wasn't ridiculously quick this weekend. Like, they were beatable, I think.
I think Red Bull are, and have been since probably before the summer break, sensibly, the masters of... Let's not make the car look too fast now, boys.
Don't want to get nerfed, basically. I mean, Perez is doing a very good job of that, to be fair.
Exactly. You know, you look at Belgium, where they were lifting, going into a Rouge. And they go, oh, it's because of the plank, and we don't want to get it too warm.
Well, maybe Hamilton should have done that, too.
Maybe Hamilton should have done that later. Yes, we will talk about that in a bit. But it does very much feel at the moment that Red Bull are just, you know, well, we'll keep winning, but we won't win by much. Our car's not that OP, you know. It's just Max making the difference when he could easily lap most of the field.
Well, two Perez's and they'd be finishing 8th every week, wouldn't they? 8th and 9th.
Well, yeah, that being said. That's two Perez's, though. They would have developed the car more sensibly.
Well,
so
less,
probably,
less
you'd probably be winning by more.
Nah, definitely not. yeah, but there wasn't tons going on in the first stint. But once it settled down, Norris was just leading, doing his thing in the P1. Hamilton second, Verstappen third, about 4 seconds off the lead, 5 seconds off the lead. Verstappen was the first one to pit from his mediums to another set of medium tyres, going for the undercut. And weirdly, McLaren did cover that off straight away because Verstappen couldn't undercut 4 seconds in a lap. So they pit Norris the very next lap. But Mercedes chose not to pit Hamilton and kind of looked like they were going for a one-stop. But then they didn't really commit to it, so they were just stuck between two strategies in the awkward middle ground, which meant he lost the place to Verstappen for the undercut and didn't get the benefit of a good strategy anyway. So,
no, it kind of felt like Mercedes suddenly realised, obviously, once Max and Lando pit, going, wait, you'll be battling? Are we going for a win here, or are we just trying to make sure that we beat Lando? What are we doing?
Yeah,
it was
very strange.
So badly done.
Yeah.
This was the team that for so long we were saying, you know, were technically pretty much perfect, weren't they, for years. What on earth is that? Because even the pit stops were not good by Mercedes. Mm.
Yeah, it's a difficult one. They've obviously had a couple years. Well, Russell got one last year and that's it. So they've been out of winning routines. And they're just a bit nice, aren't they? I was talking to my Mercedes fan friend earlier on today. No, not you. Another one.
Oh.
Slightly more deluded, I would argue. Who basically was saying... Well, I saw a quote from Toto that like basically said, it's a fair cop on the old the plank issue that we'll get onto later. And he basically said... my friend basically said, Jonathan Wheatley would have got Red Bull out of this, which I completely agree with. It's like, Red Bull played dirty to win. Mercedes don't.
Oh, absolutely. I'm getting that clipped. It's so true. So true.
Yeah. And I think Mercedes are just a bit too nice when they've actually got a competitor who's willing to win at all costs, like Red Bull.
Well, I think it's always the thing, isn't it, of course, of, you know, it's still the old adage. Mercedes are there still to sell road cars and, you know, put that technology into a road car. If Red Bull get a fine for £1 million, what are they worried about?
Yeah.
They're not going to sell another can of Red Bull in the morning. No, they don't care.
Yeah, and in fact, being the maverick rule breakers is probably good for their market, to be honest.
Oh, we've said this for years, haven't we?
Yeah, they always have been the party team that does things differently, even from when 2005 when they joined. So, yeah.
But it's just Adrian Newey's a wizard.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. So it's a shame for all the Mercedes fans out there, but it's quite funny. So we move. But yeah, that meant that Verstappen overtook Hamilton on the undercut, got up into P2, and then eventually, took quite a long time actually, did end up closing down and passing Lando Norris, who didn't put up too much of a fight, it's fair to say.
He can't make it look too easy.
Yeah, it took him 28 laps to catch and pass Lando. Yeah, but interestingly, Norris and Hamilton both took hard to their first stop, so technically could have gone to the end if they fancied it, but it clearly wasn't going to happen like that because Norris ended up bailing quite early onto another set of medium tyres for the... Was it? Oh, no, it's hard tyres for the end of the race, wasn't it? So
yes, yeah, lap it couldn't 35. Do three sets of mediums.
No, Norris did.
Oh, sorry, Lando, hard, yeah.
Lap 35, he was the first one to pit. Verstappen covered a few laps later and almost with a slow stop got undercut by Norris again, so the gap had come down for sure.
Richard.
Yep.
Gotta get that in there.
And yeah, just Hamilton, it was just so passive, the strategy, wasn't it? It was just like, oh, we'll just do our own thing and not worry about the competitors we're fighting. And pit a solid 6-7 laps later than the other two, which just left Hamilton so far off them because both times he'd lost a lot of time through the pit stop window. So it was just a weird strategy from Mercedes, to be honest.
It honestly felt like, you know, the KSI meme of, God, I don't know what I'm doing. That's what Mercedes felt like, at least in their strategy department, just saying that over and over.
It was this year, or this time last year, that James Vowles went to Williams, wasn't it?
So about now, yeah.
Yeah. I wonder if that's had a knock-on effect, an Esteban knock-on effect on the team. Because, yeah, I do think when he was there, obviously, like, you had a few blunders. I think Austria 2018 and stuff like that, for instance. But overall, they were pretty good. You look at Hungary 19 or Spain 21. Like, they knew what they were doing, and they were commanding, and they did what they set out to do. And this time, and a few times this season, they just have been very, very passive. It's strange.
Honestly, the impression I get, well, we're not winning. It doesn't matter that much.
Yeah.
Because let's be fair, for a team like Mercedes, the prize money is all but irrelevant, isn't it, really? You know, it's still obviously a stupid amount of money, and obviously, you know, it's fantastic for them to go back to the board and do all this, that, and the other. But let's be fair, Mercedes, you know, they're not going to put up on their wall at trying to sell road cars going, we finished second in the 2023 Formula One World Championship. No one cares if you haven't won in that regard. You know, it just feels like they're kind of there like, well,
it's like, what we worried about. Who cares? Yeah,
it just feels uninspired at the moment, I think is the problem.
Yeah. Shocking. Which is a shame. A shame for the fans of Mercedes, but I'm not one of them, so it's funny. Yeah, what else happened? Oh, yeah, Hamilton obviously was left on much fresher tyres than the other two, which did give him the opportunity to come back at them towards the end. And he did come back at Norris, made a pretty good move, I must say, on Lando, who did throw quite a late one.
I made my feelings known on Twitter about that one. I don't care that Norris lost, but he should have got a penalty for that. That was too late in my mind.
It was very, very aggressive. I think the thing is, he did make one move, but it was just a very aggressive.
It was in the braking zone.
Mm.
That could have very, because if Hamilton had committed, then, you know, if that had been Lando against, say, Max, or Lando against, say, another Lando, that could have been an airplane crash into turn one.
Yeah, easily. Yeah, and we saw it last year with Alonso on Stroll, didn't we? So,
well, the other way around, but yeah, I know what you mean.
Yeah.
I know we've said it so many times, haven't we? What were you going to say, sir?
The other way around. That was Stroll's, the defending driver, moving late on Alonso.
Yeah, but sorry, the way you'd worded it then to me made it out like Alonso, yeah.
No.
I know we've said it so many times before, haven't we? But I just want them to come out next year going, right, there's new rules about racing wheel to wheel. If the car's got its front wheels alongside your rear wheels, you have to give them space.
Yeah.
If you force them off the road, you've got to give up the place. You can't move in the braking zones. You can't do this. You can't do that. Let's have some wheel-to-wheel racing again.
Yeah.
Because it's just so annoying. Like, it's great now that the cars can overtake each other, but they don't battle still, do they? It's
not
just
really.
DRS passes.
Yeah. And I think that's the nature of, we've designed loads of circuits now which have really long straights and high braking zones, so that's kind of what they're going to do. They're going to make it the easiest move they can, which is why back in the refueling days, the easiest move was to pass in the pits. So
Yeah. It tells you everything you need to know, doesn't it, Stan? I know we go back to it quite a lot, that one of the best battles of the last 5 years that people still remember was Hamilton and Alonso at the Hungaroring of all places.
Yeah. with not very powerful DRS. Big discrepancy in the car paces, but
exactly.
two drivers respected each other.
Exactly, that know how to race wheel to wheel. Formula One, yeah, you fix the fact cars can now overtake. You've now got to fix the driver's mentality about how to race against each other.
They'll just clamp down on jewelry instead.
It's so frustrating. Exactly, yeah. Can't let Lewis have a Prince Albert, but you can worry about everything else. It's so stupid, man. So stupid. We rant about it so many times, but I just want good wheel to a racing back.
Yeah, but Lando got away with it. He did lose his second place, but no penalty, which was... Yeah, I think he got away with it a little bit there. And that left Hamilton to chase after Verstappen. And Verstappen was, meanwhile, having some kind of brake issues, getting quite annoyed at GP in typical fashion.
Remember how much Lewis moans, though. I love the amount of people that are
You're
now
so
saying
salty
Max...
today.
What I love is the amount of people that are now saying about how much Max moans on the radio.
Yeah.
It's almost like they broadcast the driver that's winning a lot, their radio, more than anyone else's. It would not surprise me if, on average, basically every driver moans the same amount.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
It's nothing about Max specifically, but it's the amount of people that moan now that, oh, suddenly Max is moaning those on the radio. No, he probably always has been.
Yeah.
It's just it was never broadcast.
He probably did more back when the car was rubbish.
Yeah. It's so funny to me. So funny to
me. DTS fans, innit? But respect if you're a DTS fan.
They've all got bored of the sport anyway, mate. Can't blame them, to be
fair.
They've
all left. I mean, I wouldn't, I would too if I only started watching 3 years ago. What else happened? Oh, yeah. Where are we up? I've lost track of where we are. Do you know?
We're up to about Leclerc, obviously, on that one stop because Ferrari kind of forgot about him. Do you know as well? He had like a tooth abscess or something this weekend.
Oh, that sounds a bit grim.
So he was racing under excruciating pain as well. And Ferrari completely forgot about him. And forgot about, well, so did Mercedes, about how much wear you can have on the rear plank.
Yes, they did. Ended up, the race finished. Nothing else really happened. I guess the Astons made their way from the pit lane to the points before Alonso just stopped. Because Stroll was catching him, so he thought, I better not get embarrassed here, so he just retired. And then, Verstappen won the race just about from Lewis Hamilton initially. And Lando Norris was P3. Sorry, I'm getting ahead of myself.
Foreshadowing.
And eventually, just before I went to bed last night, came out that Leclerc and Hamilton were both under investigation for having plank issues. And that's a technical directive, isn't it? A technical infringement, that's the word. So everyone kind of thought straight away, this is only going to go to the stewards if they have messed up. It's not like there's no grey area. You either have got...
Oh, either you've got enough plank under your car or you haven't. It's pretty simple.
So as soon as it came out that they were under investigation, you kind of thought, right, they're getting disqualified. And lo and behold, that is what happened. And Lewis Hamilton's hard work all race long was ended up with 0 points for the second race running. As well as Charles Leclerc, who did hard work with a tooth abscess and didn't get as many points as Hamilton, but then lost them anyway. So, everyone got bumped up.
Perez can breathe a sigh of relief.
Yeah, Perez is now, 38 clear or something? 40 points?
39, I believe,
So he's probably going to finish second in the championship, I would imagine, which is what I called about 2 weeks ago. But you called Hamilton, and then he's had 2 0 points in a row.
No, I think we called it after Qatar,
to be
fair.
Okay.
I still believe. I reckon Checo's going to have a nightmare to the end of the year. It was quite interesting, though, isn't it? Because, of course, obviously, we've known about these new... the way the cars are checked now at the end of a race as... before a Grand Prix... No, sorry. So the FIA have already decided, going into a weekend, which 4 cars they're checked at the end of the race. I think they've got 2 reserve cars as well, in case 2 of the cars get written off or something, or don't finish. But it is interesting, isn't it, of course, because Leclerc and Hamilton... So we haven't had anyone get disqualified now in what feels like years.
That happens slightly more regularly than...
It happens occasionally still.
So the last one I can definitely remember was USA 2018?
What about Japan 19?
Oh, Japan 19
was the one I can think of
with Renault's
brakes.
Under the bus.
Yeah.
And there was a Haas that year as well in 2018.
Yes, yeah. It doesn't happen often then, the cars are disqualified. But what is fascinating about it, isn't it? Of course, first of all, you know, to get the conspiracy theory out of the way, Verstappen's car was also checked. His car was fine.
Yeah.
But if two of the four cars you've checked at the end of the race have been disqualified for a technical infringement, how many other cars were down that grid that might... Because it might well have just been that it was Hamilton and Charles. They were the only two cars that had that in the entire field. But it's highly unlikely, isn't it?
Yeah. Especially, I think, just check their teammates to begin with, to be honest. Because Russell and Sainz were not checked and could have very easily had the same issue. If they had I guess it's a height. It's like a ride height setup issue. It's not a car issue necessarily.
Yeah, it was basically just obviously how much the skid blocks worn away.
Yeah, Sebastian Vettel was the most recent one in 2021.
Yes, of course. Yeah,
but was that a fuel irregularity? I think
that was a lack of fuel sample. Yeah,
so that
was. Which I don't get how you've run out of fuel at the Hungaroring because it's not a particularly powered.
Yeah, and circuit, they had a safety car that race as well. Who knows?
Yeah.
Yeah. So I just think the problem is if you get two out of four disqualified, they could just go down the grid and then it turns out 10 of the cars are disqualified and it just looks really bad on F1. So I guess, yeah, they maybe don't want to throw themselves under the bus like that. But then is it fair? So for instance, this pushed up Yuki Tsunoda, it pushed up Alex Albon and Logan Sargeant into the points more than they would have got. And likes of the Haas and the Alfa Romeos suddenly are not getting points. Say, for instance, Russell and Sainz are disqualified too. Suddenly, Hülkenberg's ninth. Suddenly, I think, was it Joe or Bottas next? I can't remember. Someone would be, they'd be 10th. And you've got just more points going around. I guess the caveat to that is that Tsunoda, Sargeant and Albon all get more as well because they're getting pushed
up. That would only become a really worrying factor if suddenly there was, say, a 2-point gap from 6th to 7th and a 1-point gap from 7th to 8th,
yeah.
Which, of course, isn't the case in Formula 1.
Apart from 9th,
the gaps
10th,
only
yeah.
get smaller.
Yeah.
No, but that's what I mean. The gaps don't get bigger anywhere again.
Fair. So maybe I'm just salty because Hulk finished 11th in the end.
I think you are. The fact that Logan Sargeant has scored a point, despite the fact I don't think he's really ran in the top 10 at any point this year on track, is kind of staggering, isn't it?
Yeah, I feel like the girl Kubica in Hockenheim, wouldn't it?
Pretty much. Pretty much.
Yeah. But that was all dramatic, and Hamilton is current form is the worst driver in Formula 1 based on the last two races.
Is he worse than Hulk?
Well, a DNF and a DSQ. You can't get much worse than that.
Yeah, sorry, yeah, I forgot, yeah. I think you meant just in terms of points.
No.
Yeah, no, Hamilton, yeah, has been. If Formula 1 was a two-race championship, starting in Qatar, Hamilton would be last in the championship.
Be.
It's like 2020, wasn't it? Max Verstappen was the worst driver in the Italian championship.
He was.
Because he DNF'd all three times.
Wild. So that was a wild time to be alive. But, yeah, Logan Sargeant, talking of him, fair play, got a point. It was all right. It was well earned. I was going to say it wasn't very well earned. He matched Albon in the race very well. He finished a few seconds off.
It's a bit strong. Yeah.
But he was all right. He was definitely his strongest weekend.
The thing is, at the end of the day, I'd say Monza still. The fact he was running in the top 10 most of the day, and then it was only right at the end Bottas got him.
But was he
Monza,
was
I think
behind
still.
Albon, wasn't he, still?
Yeah, that's because he wasn't that far behind him in terms of raw pace. It was just Albon beefed the McLarens all day.
Hmm.
I think, don't get me wrong, one of his better races still, but I would still say Monza is the one that sticks out to me because he was running inside the top 10 until about four laps to go.
But he finished 1.2 seconds off Albon this race, which is very good going.
Yes, yeah. And, you know, at the end of the day, he finished in a position that meant that he was the 10th fastest car that wasn't illegal to cross the line. For all we know, he might have been much higher than that.
He might have been
He could have actually been fifth, or he could have been disqualified as well. The fact that we live in a sport that's meant to be the pinnacle of engineering and now we don't know that is quite worrying, isn't it? But clearly he knows what a kilometre is, and we're proud of Logan Sargeant for that.
Yes, we will move on to the quiz. So gonna caveat that one in there. Lewis Hamilton, as we just been discussing, has failed to score points in the last two races.
Yes,
the last time that happened.
Oh, no.
Do you know what it was? This isn't the question.
No, I know. I'm trying to think when it would have been. Is it McLaren days still?
Yeah, it is. Yeah.
That's mad, isn't it?
It was 2010.
Italy, Singapore. Oh, no, 2010, sorry. Oh, is it Italy, Belgium?
Italy, Singapore.
It is Italy, Singapore, yeah.
Two DNFs, both. No, one was on lap one, wasn't it? One was on lap.
Yeah.
After a safety car restart. But 11 drivers, I was quite surprised by this, but only 11 drivers scored points across those two races. Nine of the top tens were the same on the two. You've got a minute to name all of them. Go.
Seb, Mark, Fernando, Felipe, Jensen, Nico, Michael Schumacher, Robert Kubica, Nick Heidfeld, Adrian Sutil, the Antonio Luizzi.
You've got him this time. Yeah, you've got eight. No, you've got nine out of the 11 already.
Okay. You've got a while to go. Trying to think which big team have I forgotten about. Buemi?
No.
Bordet? Alguersuari? Bordet was gone, yeah. Alguersuari? No. Hülkenberg?
Yes.
Barrichello?
Yes. There you go. Yeah, there we go. Easy, easy. I did ask you a very similar question accidentally a few weeks ago, so...
Yeah, we've had two 2010 name questions, because, of course, only our podcast would do that.
Yeah. Yeah. Well done. Good quiz performance.
Thank you.
Straight on to the old predictions, which didn't go swimmingly. They went all right.
What are the scores on the doors heading into this one?
I swear it's not changed in ages. We just I'm on
58. Well, no, the points have changed. It's just the gap has.
Yeah, the gap. I'm on 58. You're on 56. So 2 points in my favour.
So I've only got 5 races to claw this back. It's not a lot, but I have got to start clawing it back, haven't I?
Yeah.
What I think I went max, didn't I?
You did.
Which was only worth 4 points in the end, because you didn't get the pole on Friday.
You then went Lando... Lewis.
So I get 2 points for Lando because Lewis got disqualified when I would have got 2 points for both of them being in the top three.
Yeah,
but in the
so
wrong
it didn't
place.
Make a difference in the end.
So I got 4 points. Six points.
You got six
even.
Points overall. Yes.
Yeah, okay.
Did
you also say Max?
I actually didn't. I called a Lando Norris race win, which wasn't far
did,
away.
Didn't you?
You know what? For half the race, I was looking all right. but sadly not. So I did go... A max pole, max sprint win. So I got 2 points.
So that's
for that.
2 points. Yeah.
Norris
1 point
race
for Lando.
Win didn't happen.
Yeah.
Got 1 point there. I said Piastri second place, which didn't happen.
Definitely didn't happen.
The funniest thing for me was a Carlos Sainz P3. So we take it.
Oh dearie me.
So I'll take a little 5 on a shocking weekend. And yeah, the gap.
So he's just 1 point in it.
1 point in it with 4 races to go.
And I still get to pick first at the moment.
Yes, yes. So you're on what? 62 and I'm on 63. George
Wild.
Russell.
Wild. We love it. We love it. I can't believe it's the first... In 3 years we've been doing this podcast, it's going to be the first one that comes down to the wire.
Yeah. The only championship battle this year, really.
The only exciting championship battle, anyway. Driver of the day, Jamie 183.
Driver of the day.
Or driver of the weekend, I suppose.
Yeah. I mean, there wasn't... Like, was there any huge standouts, really? I think Gasly did well, to be honest. Let's finish seventh.
Gasly, yeah.
Seventh and
honestly,
sixth.
Honestly? Honestly? I was going to give Charles Leclerc a bit of a shout-out.
I don't know. He's...
That Ferrari, I don't genuinely believe, should have been anywhere near pole. Was kind of my thinking. And looking at, you know, they screwed him on a Sunday, so obviously he finished behind Sainz. But the rest of the weekend, I think he maximised everything he could out of that car.
Yeah, potentially. He was only 0.2 ahead of Sainz in main quali. But that did
still
make a difference.
Still took pole.
Yeah.
Exactly. I think he deserves a shout out.
He does. I would give it to Gasly or Verstappen, but I'll give it to Gasly.
Norris as well. Hamilton, obviously, it's a shame about the disqualification as well. You know, especially in the sprint race throughout the first half, he was the only real person all weekend that looked like he could stop Max, wasn't he?
Yeah.
Shame it was an illegal car, but
yeah.
That's how Leclerc took pole. So. Yeah, exactly. Yeah, so I think there's quite a few there. You know what? I'm going to say Logan Sargeant. First ever points in Formula One. Why not, eh? Despite the fact he never ran top 10 all weekend.
And that means every driver scored points again, which is only the second time in F1 history.
After last year. Full-time driver.
Was it after last year? I thought it was
last year. It's not the second time in history, I don't believe.
2018 was the one I was thinking of.
Is that the only other time in it? Oh, no, I'm thinking the teams, aren't I? Sorry.
Yeah.
Did everyone score last year?
No. Mazepin wasn't here.
Mazepin wasn't there. Mick Schumacher did.
Who were the backmarkers? Who was Latifi? I think everyone did.
Yeah, I think everyone did score points last year.
I'm going to do some research. Hulk didn't, and he stood in for Vettel at the start.
Yeah, but full-time. Because De Vries hasn't scored points this year.
Oh, yeah, true. I guess he wasn't.
Or Ricardo still, has he?
No, not Ricardo either. Yeah, every full-time driver did last year as well. Fair play.
Wow.
So, I'm wrong. Wonderful. Ignore me.
Wonderful. Anything else to add, Jamie?
Not that I don't think so. I think everything's done.
Wonderful. Wonderful. Thank you all, as always, then, so much for listening. It's been quite a big week, hasn't it, for Formula One? We went through a lot. Obviously, we'll be back probably Thursday or Friday with the Mexican GP preview, because what's better than a track that Verstappen never loses at, even when he hasn't got the best car, is Verstappen now with the best car in Mexico. Jamie, as always, it's been a pleasure. And yeah, we'll be back very, very soon with more Knowing Wheel.